Welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast about science fiction, TV, and film, featuring actors, directors, and writers of color. My name is Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter as SF in Color.
And today we're talking about the acclaimed animated film, Japanese animated film, Your Name. So, Melissa,
what is its name in Japanese?
Kimi no Na wa.
Very nice.
I said that without even looking. Yes.
I'm so proud of you.
Have you heard? So, Melissa, did you hear about this film when it was released in the U.S.?
Or yeah, it got a lot of buzz. Mm-hmm. In certain circles, let's say that.
Sure. Let's say anime, weeaboo, otaku circles.
I wasn't going to say it, but correct. But yeah, I heard a lot of good things about it, but I never felt a need to go watch it. So I just mm-hmm. watched it for the first time before we, you know, decided to talk about it.
Right, right. So I saw it, I think, my first time seeing it was sometime this April. And I saw it at this, like, indie movie theater, and I was like, when I first saw the trailer, I was like, oh, this is, like, a really cute, like, Freaky Friday type movie. It's, mm-hmm, like, you know, yeah. Body swap, it's all cute and whatever. I did see some, like, little mumblings about something about a twist, twist ending or twist in the middle of the plot, and I was like, oh, whatever, it'll be fine. And then so I watched it, I went to watch it with a friend, because I was just really stressed out, and I was like, I need to watch something, like, cute and light. And I don't know if I would say the whole entire movie is cute and light.
That was probably a mistake.
Well, I mean, it kind of still worked, because it almost was very cathartic to, like, mm-hmm. go through that experience in the theater. Because I knew there was a twist, I just didn't realize what the twist was and how intense the twist would be. But it was a roller coaster of emotion. And me and mm-hmm. my friend, if we watched it, we were like, whoa, what? But it was a good time. And I remember I was freaking out about it to my sister, because I was like, she is in that circle of weeaboo, otaku, whatever you may call it. And she was like, yeah, I've heard of it, but like, don't tell me anything because she hadn't seen it. But she finally saw it recently. And I recently watched it again for a second time. And Melissa, you said you heard about it, but the first time you saw it was, what, like, a couple weeks ago or
mm-hmm. something? Yeah. And, you know, I think it may have been a mistake to have waited. Because by the time I had watched it, I had heard so much about it. Not spoiling things.
Oh.
I wasn't spoiled, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it had been built up, like, so many people had told me about it, and so many people had talked about it, and they're oh my gosh, it's the twist. And then, you know, I watched it, and I was like, this is good, but if I'd gone into a theater or the experience without the expectation, I would have really enjoyed it, I think.
So when I went into the theater, I think the only thing I did was I saw the trailer beforehand, because I wanted to pick a movie. Saw the trailer beforehand, thought it looked really beautiful. And I kind of saw something about a twist, but I didn't really read beyond that. And so when I went, it was a huge shock and it was like really good. Mm-hmm. I did feel upon second time, like my rewatch, I just wasn't as affected by the twist the second time around. Not that that's horrible or anything. But it was just not as impactful as the first time I saw it, but mm-hmm. that didn't make it bad or anything. And I've not seen this director's work before, but I know he's done other films, like, that are, you know, animated Japanese films that are very, like, depressing. And, like, basically this is his, like, most lighthearted work. Like, all the rest of his other stuff is so much more depressing. So, that's great. He finally released something that's happy, at least.
Happy is a strong word, but okay.
It's not when you consider his other body of work.
Okay. Like, the other relatively is, like, happy, then.
It's the happiest work that he's done. So
okay, I'll give you that.
I don't know. I have heard his other stuff is pretty, is like the same thing, like very beautiful, very like thought provoking and sad mm-hmm. and stuff. But yeah, first time I was really kind of blown away by it. Second time, still liked it, but I don't think I was as like, oh my gosh, about it the second time watching it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the movie thinks it's smarter than it is at some points.
Hmm, okay.
Which is one of those things that really annoys me.
How so?
Like, I read a lot of fan theories about it afterwards, and I can understand how the memory loss essentially works.
Okay.
But the way that they kind of finagle it is just so convenient and particular that it...
Okay. Oh, like how everything kind of just lined up perfectly for them to resave the town or whatever?
Well, not just the ending, but just... Well, that too, actually. Yeah. That too. But also, just so the story would have the emotional beats and the emotional resonance that the creators intended, they had to remember slash forget at convenient moments.
Oh, I see. So if that was more, like, consistent,
yeah,
then it and would like, be... I've read Deus Ex Machina kind of-ish, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like, I think if they had, like, established it early on, I think it would have been better. I've read fan theories about it, and, like, it seems...
Beforehand or after?
No, after.
Uh-huh.
And it seems generally consistent, but it's just very finicky. It's like, sure. If it's a Wednesday on the 3rd of the month, then... they will remember.
Wait, what? Okay, I didn't even read that crazy of fan theories about this.
No, I was being sarcastic. Oh, I was exaggerating.
I thought you were legitimately saying that. Okay.
No. That's what happens when your sarcasm voice is very similar to your regular voice. It's a real legitimate problem.
But yeah, I guess. I mean, it's definitely a film that has... It's not a perfect film. It has its flaws. Even the director said as such. He's like... He was kind of being like, oh, like... I almost wish it didn't get so popular because it's, like, definitely has issues and, like, blah, blah, blah. But...
Do you know what issues he'd mentioned specifically?
I can't remember if he said specifically what the issues were, but I think he also... Like, he understands that it's not perfect. Like, the plot's not exactly, you know, watertight and all that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Like,
That was also sarcasm.
Oh, my God. I cannot with you anymore. Okay. But... anyway... I guess that, I mean, consistency and continuity and, like, weird stuff about, like, how does time work in the film is kind of, could be confusing or, you know, Deus Ex Machina-ish. I think overall the film works, like...
I think you're right.
I don't think that it's, like, a huge gaping plot holes or anything.
No.
Mm-hmm.
There are things where I look back and I think, how could they not have realized that they're years apart for so many reasons...
Right.
But because it's a city / rural environment, it does lend itself to it a little better.
Can I just say, when the film started up, the second time I watched it, and they were doing their little montages of, like, you know, Mitsuha and Taki's, like, life, like, city versus country, I was like, just a small town girl. No, seriously, like, I was just like, this is basically a Journey song. I mean...
Yeah, that's fair.
Really, a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took it wasn't a midnight train to Tokyo, but she took a train to Tokyo.
To anywhere.
To somewhere that wasn't the country, and then just a city boy born and raised in somewhere in Tokyo. Like, I was just like...
You're losing it.
just a bit, but hey, like, the whole... I mean, I guess the whole country versus city thing is a very old trope, but, like, it still holds.
It's an oldie but a goodie.
It
works.
Yeah, and before I forget, there were some other... media, other works that this film reminded me of, that if you guys liked Your Name, you should probably check out these. Well, one of them's a webcomic that I read a long time ago. It's a similar conceit. It's called Dreamless, and I'll link to it in the show notes. But in that webcomic, the kind of plot of it is there's a girl in the US during the 40s who, like, does the thing, like, she switches. But she switches when she's sleeping, and it's every day, with this boy from Japan, and obviously this being the 40s, World War II, duh. But, which is, like, you know, highly dramatic and all that, but That one's pretty good. The art in it's pretty good. So that one's called Dreamless. And then there was some other... Oh, is it bad that I thought of Secret Garden? I don't know if that... I don't know if this is a situation where I'd be like, if you like Your Name, you would like Secret Garden. But, I mean, I definitely feel like Dreamless... Dreamless is very... Yeah.
That sounds comparable,
Dreamless is very, like, very similar to Your Name. And I don't... I feel like Secret Garden, it's its own thing.
Well, I feel like it depends on what pieces of Your Name you like.
Sure.
I think...
Yes,
for if body you... switching, the Korean drama Secret Garden.
Yeah, is cute a great rom-com, dramatic body switching. Totally and, recommend and Secret Garden. But if you're into the weird sci-fi stuff and I don't know if Secret Garden's for you.
Well, I mean, you can have a diverse, eclectic range of tastes. But
sure,
yes.
Sure, sure, sure.
Such as myself.
Such as us. But yeah, Secret Garden's also a good one to check. That's a Korean drama that you could check out. I think, is it free on Viki or whatever?
I would guess it is, but I'd have to look it up to verify.
Viki is like a legit site, right? Like it's legal and stuff. So I think it's free on Viki. If it is, we'll link to it.
I mean, there have been a lot of body swap.
Oh, yeah.
Not just dramas, but you know, movies, TV shows, whatever.
The fun stuff is when they kind of put a twist on it, which is what I like about Your Name, Dreamless, Secret Garden.
Yeah.
It's like body swap with a bit of a twist, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I did not see this twist coming for Your Name when I first saw it. I had no idea. I mean, which is funny because they make a lot of allusions to, like, in the beginning and during the film about the switch, but, like... It's not really clear until, like, they make it abundantly clear towards the middle end what's going on. Do you have any, like, media?
Can you hear that?
From my end or your end?
My end.
No. What is going on?
There's a really, really loud helicopter, and I have literally no idea why.
Melissa's a fugitive. We have to end
They're
the podcast now. That's why we were not on. That's why we haven't posted in weeks because Melissa has been on the run. When she's finally been caught, just kidding.
Yeah, I think they're gonna catch up with me. Bye.
No, it's all good. We're not fugitives. We're just lazy.
The truth.
Okay, so do you have any body swap media that you can recommend or you thought were similar-ish? Because I don't, just watching this reminded me of a lot of other things that I've seen before.
Yeah, it definitely did remind me of a few things. That said,
anything noteworthy that you could recommend or?
I mean, no.
No.
The one that I kept thinking about was the recent Freaky Friday. Well, not recent, but the
Lindsay Lohan
one.
That wasn't recent. Wasn't that, like, Lindsay Lohan and, like, what's-her-face? Yeah. Jamie Lee Curtis.
And I don't know why I kept thinking of that one, because it's similar at all.
Yeah, the only similarity is body swap.
Right. But I thought of that.
Oh, my dad's home. Sorry, I think the door's going to open really loudly, but whatever, we'll keep going.
I liked the twist in Your Name.
Uh-huh.
I think it really added a unique flavor to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That said, once the twist happened, it never went back to what it was before. So it felt like the first 20 or 25 minutes was promising a movie that never happened.
It was a very different film. It was like almost two separate parts.
Exactly. It felt like two different movies, and there's a piece of me that just kind of wants to see that first movie because it was cute.
Well, don't they get kind of their cute redemption thing at the end?
I mean, yeah, they're in like that super duper dome thing and
dome thing.
Okay, I'm sorry, not dome thing, valley.
Oh, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about, like, the end.
Oh, the end.
When they, like, re-meet each other years later, and it's like, oh, a promise of happiness or whatever. Like, we don't get to see the happiness, but, like, it's supposed to be sad and stuff and thought-provoking, Melissa.
I mean, it's sad and thought-provoking, but I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, I definitely thought, I wasn't really sure. Well, I remember the first time watching it when I didn't know what was going to happen. I was definitely confused by, I guess, the pacing or the beats for the ending. Because I was like, wait, what's... How are they going to end this? You know?
Yeah.
Which I think it... I think the ending works. But I can see how, like... You do get a kind of sense of, like, oh, I feel so unresolved. Because I, like, want to know, like, are they going to be able to make it work? Right?
Right.
So that's kind of... That kind of is like, ugh.
In some ways, it's like a romantic movie where they're building up and building up, and it ends with the main characters meeting.
It's like reverse.
And, yeah.
You know what I could kind of say, though? Sorry. Sorry for cutting off.
No,
do you want to go?
Go for it.
Okay. I was thinking a little bit about... This isn't a body swap, but it has a little bit of the whole memory thing. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind kind of has that kind of weird ending too, where it's like, oh, we're meeting again, but they don't know each other.
Right.
But
I've
almost
never
feel
seen
like that's
it.
Different, though. You've never seen it. I've seen it once. That was many years ago.
I do know, like, a little bit about it, though.
I think that's a little bit more... I think that... But that film is more thematically consistent overall. It doesn't... I wouldn't say it has, like, first half happy, last half sad. Like,
yeah.
That's not how I would characterize that film. That film was just, like, Inception-y the whole time. But in a good way. Like, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't dislike Your Name, and I think some of the segmented portions of it actually kind of lend to its charm.
Okay.
Because it's an unconventional storytelling method, and it kind of reminds me of when I first started watching foreign TV shows, where I didn't know the way the episodes were supposed to flow. I didn't know what the stereotypes and the cliches exactly were. And so my expectations were completely different than what I got.
Yeah.
And I had to recontextualize everything.
Yeah,
and then once you become...
Go on.
Once you become familiar with a genre, once you become familiar, you know, with a way of storytelling, it changes the way you see things.
Yeah.
And maybe because I'm not that familiar with this way of storytelling, I have had difficulties with Japanese animation films in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like them, but they never feel like a cohesive story to me.
Oh,
at least the ones that I've seen.
I yeah. Okay, I see that. I think I've seen... Like, I am no otaku, but I've seen enough, like, Japanese media films or, you know, anime or whatever, that I think I kind of have a bit of a grasp or more of a familiarity with the conventions and, like, the storytelling and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I guess I was used to it. I definitely was thinking a lot about, with in regards to this film, I had seen, I know in film class, I had seen, like, a lot of, I've seen, like, a couple of Japanese films. And, like, noticed that the pacing was very different than, like, an American film. And I think we talked a little bit... Gonna do a little plug for one of our old episodes. We talked a little bit about this in our Godzilla episode. So we watched the original Japanese Godzilla from, like, 1951 or 4 or whatever. And we talked about this, too, about the whole storytelling convention thing and, like, how, you know, different cinemas from different nations have different feels and stuff. So we did a whole... We talked about that quite a bit in that episode. And this reminded me again of, there was like an old Japanese film we saw, and I probably talked about it in the Godzilla episode, but in class I watched something called, I think it was called Tokyo Story or something, and it was very, like, I definitely see influences from that, or at least that era, genre, whatever, in Your Name, like, just like very slow pacing, like, literally there's shots in Your Name where it's just like beautiful shots, slow shots of like the countryside or whatever, and I'm like, literally I definitely saw this in like Tokyo Story or whatever that movie was called, because I guess maybe I'm wrong here, but I think there's definitely some kind of genre or like aesthetic thing with in Japanese culture, I mean media culture, where it's like talking about, like, the mundane, ordinary, everyday parts of life, where they, like, will do slow shots of stuff like that, like a field in the country or something like that. Like, I've definitely seen this convention before. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, that just reminded me of, like, the old stuff that I had seen. So I was like, oh, cool. But, like, I guess for someone who might not have seen that or experienced that, they're like, why is this movie so slow? You know? Like, I can kind of see that, too.
It wasn't as much the slow pacing as much as it was how disjointed it was. And in a way, I kind of like it because it is kind of like real life. Because real life doesn't have neat little segments. Chapters with building tension and then... Right. You know, rising action and all that jazz.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that it takes place over many years is kind of add to that. And plus, you're coming back and forth between these two people and their lives. And then also, they can't remember that they're cutting back and forth sometimes. Right. So, like, that's why it gets a little bit messy. Versus when I think about that webcomic I was reading, Dreamless, that was... Like, they were switching every day, so that wasn't... Yeah. There was no weird, like, oh, I don't remember switching. Like, they remember switching. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
some of the messiness was part of the charm.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious to, like, hear what you guys think of it. If you guys have seen it and you want to, like, let us know what you think of, what your thoughts on Your Name are. But, yeah, do you want to just get into it starting from the beginning? I know you don't remember too much, but I'll try to guide us.
I mean, I did watch it 2 weeks ago, so we'll see how well my memory has retained it.
So I've seen it twice, so I think I have a better, I guess, grasp on the most of the plot and stuff that's going on. I also took notes, so okay, Your Name. So when we start off at the beginning, this being an anime film, we get a like nice little intro with like credits, and you know, it's like your typical anime intro where, you know, it's the two characters, you're seeing them do their daily life stuff and it's cute and whatever. Like, it's not a cold open is what I'm trying to say,
right?
So immediately we see the... So are you familiar with the concept of the red string of fate, Melissa?
Yes.
Okay, because you've seen enough Japanese media to know what that is. Or no,
I don't... Well, I feel like I've heard of it.
Oh, you've heard of it.
Before I ever consumed any Japanese media.
Oh, interesting.
I feel like that's just a pretty...
standard thing.
Yeah, I think it's something that's run through pop culture enough.
But I think Red String of Fate is specifically East Asian, is what I'm saying.
Okay, well...
Do you know what I mean? Or do you know
what I'm talking about? That sounds right, but I definitely heard of it before I ever started... really diving in depth.
Okay, so I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, so hopefully we'll link to it later. So Wikipedia calls this the red thread of fate. I guess red thread sounds a little bit more poetic than red string, whatever. Red thread of fate, or the red thread of marriage, if you're into that kind of thing. So other variants is an East Asian belief originating from Chinese legend. According to this myth, the gods tie an invisible red cord around the ankles of those that are destined to meet one another in a certain situation or help each other in a certain way. Often in Japanese and Korean culture, it is thought to be tied around the little finger. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. Two people connected by the red thread are destined lovers regardless of place, time, or circumstance. Well, I guess time really does work in this situation.
Yeah.
Place, time, or circumstance. This magical cord may stretch or tangle but never break. The myth is similar to the Western concept of a soulmate or a destined flame. I don't know what the heck a destined flame is, but soulmate I've heard before.
Hey, Maggie.
Yes, what?
You're my destined flame.
Oh my gosh. Sorry, I'm just looking at the rest of the Wikipedia article. For some reason, Pinky Swear is under this. Red String Kabbalah. What? What is this? So, wait, hold on. Do you know about this red string in Jewish folk custom? I don't know if this is more of a Israeli thing or not.
I don't know too much about Kabbalah, honestly.
Okay.
But
that's one of the links on the bottom.
I'm, like, vaguely familiar.
It just says, there's wearing a thin scarlet or crimson string as a type of talisman is a Jewish folk custom as a way to ward off misfortune brought about by the evil eye. tradition popularly thought to be associated with Kabbalah and religious forms of Judaism, blah blah blah. So interesting. But yeah, I can't with the rhymingness of it. Red thread of fate.
You can call it a red string if you
red
want.
Red string sounds, it's easier for me to say. Red string of fate is like a pretty popular trope in East Asian storytelling. Mm. So when I saw it, it was pretty obvious. Like when you see the red string in the beginning intro, you're like, duh. I mean, like, I think, again, we've talked about this before, most of the time, just as consumers of pop culture and consumers of media, we kind of, when we see a guy and a girl within a similar age range, we like automatically think as moviegoers or TV watchers, like they are a couple or they will become a couple. Right. Regardless of whether that's true or not, like that's kind of our default assumption because of, you know, the heteronormative, you know, ways of storytelling and all that stuff, right? So
yes.
That's kind of the default assumption anyway. So if you were just going to pretend that wasn't a thing, now you have a very obvious red string at the very beginning of the movie. So, like, you already know.
definitely.
Like, it's even more, like, they double down. They're like, they will become, you know, they are soulmates or whatever. So that was, okay, like, fine. I'm anticipating this to be some kind of, there's some, like, element of romance in this film already, because they literally told us in the beginning of the movie.
Yep.
And, okay, I wrote down Dreamless, because that's what I thought about. What is that? Okay, sorry, I'm just, like, going through my notes, and I have some very interesting abbreviations, but I can understand them.
Would you like to share any?
It's not that
okay.
Hilarious. Did you see anything interesting in the intro that you wanted to talk about, or do you not remember, or...
I'm a great podcaster.
You're great.
That said, I really liked it. I don't think there's anything like that really stood out.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch it the first time, there's so much coming at you.
Right. In you're an not intro really like sure that. What to, what
you're just like trying to grab onto everything.
Yeah. Oh, and, but before even the intro starts, there's the whole something falling from space through the atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you, like, don't really know what that means, but you kind of just go with it. And then, of course, the second
That's a lot of the movie.
That's a lot of movie? Okay, yeah.
The movie.
Oh, like, you don't know what's going on, but you just go with it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember my first time watching it, I was like, oh, this is pretty, but, like, I don't know why they're doing this, but they must be doing it for a reason. But then, when the second time I watched it, I was like, oh, I know exactly what this, like, you are, like,
right.
you are the, from the perspective of the asteroid or whatever that's falling, that mm-hmm. is, like, the whole big plot in the movie, right? So, sorry, I just thought of a great title name for this episode. I just thought of a great name. It is Mitsuha Taki and the Great Comet of
Oh my god.
Anyway, moving
Your theater
on.
Theater nerd is showing, Maggie.
Isn't this whole podcast our nerdness showing? What are you talking about?
Theater nerd.
Whatever. Theater nerds. I wouldn't say theater nerds are the best nerds, but anyway. They're the loudest and most egotistical nerds. Oh, that's probably not true either. Anyway, getting back on subject.
Anyway.
Sorry. So, yeah, I forgot to mention the very, very beginning is the, I guess, Tiamat falling through the atmosphere.
Right, yeah.
And then, I don't know if it splits when we're watching it, but that's the like, the opening. And then we get the little musical intro sequence thing. Which I like the music in this.
Yeah, the music was good.
Yeah.
I liked that. It made me want to look it up after I watched it.
Yeah, I think
I did not, I wanted to.
And it's the thought that counts. I think the guy who did the music, his name, his stage name or group name is like Radwimps or something. But yeah, they're pretty good. They
That's
did
a
good
great
music.
Name.
I don't know about the name, but the music was good.
That's
sorry,
a great
I, like,
name. What are you talking about?
I just like hit my phone, so that's what that noise was.
Are you okay?
Are you making some weird pun joke? Or going to make some kind of weird pun joke? I'm not indulging you.
No, I was just legitimately wondering about your own safety.
We're going to get back to this, to your name now. So,
Melissa.
What? I'm
your
so
name.
Confused.
Oh, you said you're
my.
I've been waiting to make that joke for 30 minutes, man.
I hate you. Okay, let's get let's get back to the movie. you have any thoughts about the very beginning, the musical intro? You said you kind of were just like, it's cute.
Yeah, the first, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10 minutes of the movie, like, the timeline is very funky. It's a little weird about how,
What do you mean the timeline was funky?
It doesn't happen, it isn't clear what days are which, and it isn't clear whether it's happening in a chronological order or not. So,
oh, I see. Like, even in the very, very beginning, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's, I think that's what adds to it. Like, I don't think I was questioning the chronological order when I watched it the first time. I kind of just went with it, and I assumed that everything was going chronologically. But you were thinking a little bit more critically and were like, what's going on with the days? Is that what you're saying?
Right. So, you know, basically towards the beginning where they begin waking up in each other's bodies, and we see essentially him waking up in her body,
right,
being freaked out.
Yeah.
And then very soon after, we see her waking up in her own body. And
And that was kind of confusing.
Confused. Yeah, I was confused. I'll just admit that. I mean, like, it righted itself. I don't mind confusion, especially in the beginning of a film like that. Mm-hmm. I actually kind of like it. But it was interesting looking back now, given the timeline that we know now. Does that make sense?
Okay, I think I understand.
Because it's interesting that they seem to intentionally distort the timeline from the very beginning.
Yeah. There's no way you could know that the 3-year gap was a thing until they made it clear to the viewers. Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like even though the movie does have confusing parts, I think it still works overall. I don't think it's so confusing that you can't follow it.
No, yeah. I think it's definitely followable. It's pretty cohesive. Mm-hmm. And after I finished it, I just wanted to talk about it for like an hour. So that's a good movie too.
But then
didn't. Or a really bad one.
Well, I don't think it's really bad. I think it's pretty good.
Well, no. If I finish a movie and I really want to talk about it, it's either really good or really bad.
Yeah. So one thing I noticed, and this was like, I think the translate. So I think we both watched the subtitled version.
Yes.
Although there is a English dub release that I heard was pretty decent. The subtitles, I just noticed really quickly that, and this isn't that big of a deal, but I noticed the younger sister character, whose name I can never remember, she calls Mitsuha Big Sis. She doesn't call her Mitsuha she says Mitsuha, but the subtitles say Big Sis or something.
Okay, yeah.
Or the opposite. And I was like, that's odd. Like, why don't they just use what they're actually saying? So I don't know. Maybe the subs are not 110% accurate all the time. I don't know why they chose to change it. But anyway,
I guess it's more common in our culture to refer to people probably by name rather than their familial relation.
Oh, that is true. That's actually very true.
Oh, I made a good point.
Yes, having a white person in the show is very helpful from time to time. No, I'm serious though, because like that was confusing to me why they switched it, but that also makes a ton of sense because like, so in at least in Chinese culture, because I have a Chinese background, like I mainly call my family members by like, you know, familial names. Like I don't call them by their actual names. Some of them I don't even know their actual real names. like no joke. Like it's very common. You call them little sister or big brother or, you know.
You don't know your big little uncle sister's name. That's a little awkward.
I know my little sister's name. But, like, I don't know. Like, I call my mom's brothers. I call them, you know, literally big uncle and little uncle. With big referring to the older uncle and little referring to the younger uncle. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, I don't know their names. I just call them Big Uncle and Little Uncle. So, like, I guess, yeah, that's, like, a weird... See, like, cultural blind spots like that. So, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that, Melissa.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for.
To provide the white American perspective. But, no, so that was just a small thing that I noticed, but Melissa explained that, so thank you for explaining localization to me.
It is interesting, though, the way that subtitles can change meaning.
Yeah.
I find it really fascinating, because people will translate things, you know, essentially meaning the same thing, but the connotation's different.
Yeah, yeah.
And it can give completely different meanings. When you watch something that's in a foreign language, it's so difficult sometimes to grasp the intricacies of things, because yeah. you don't know what they're trying to imply by using the word that they use, because you can't grasp.
Right. It's just a completely different thing.
Right, exactly.
I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast, but I've definitely done a little bit of research into this, but kind of thinking about how just, like, language and language structure affects how you think.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird to think about. But, like...
Yeah, linguistics is pretty cool.
I don't know. It's cool. I don't think I have freaky. No, not freaky. I don't think I have the, mental chops to, like, do linguistics as, like, a full-time profession, but, like, mm-hmm. I find it fascinating. So, one thing that I think so I had watched it in April, then I, like, read up about the movie afterward. That's what I do when I like something. I don't do research beforehand to hype myself up. Once I like it, I'll do research after.
I think that makes sense.
It does make sense. I'm not wasting my time on getting hyped up for something that's terrible. So I did some, like, kind of research and on, like, kind of reading up on fan theories back in April, but it's been a while, so I haven't been looking at that stuff recently. But I did remember someone mentioned that Mitsuo's grandmother has a red ribbon in her hair, and I was like, that's pretty details. Nice. Like, that's obviously someone who's seen the movie, like, a bunch of times who was able to pick that out, but I didn't know that. So I saw that when she comes out of her room and sees her grandmother, her grandmother does have a ribbon in her hair that I think it's a red ribbon, and I was like, good touch, director.
That's actually really nice. I didn't notice that.
Yeah. But, I mean, I know this movie isn't perfect, but there's some parts that I just really, really enjoy, especially the beginning. The beginning is really strong, I think. So, like, when we open up to see, you know, what is the world that she lives in? Okay, she lives in a small town, like a really small town.
Yeah.
Like, small enough that there's, like, a mayoral, you know, truck thing for the election. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a thing that, I mean, like, culture aside, that's not a thing you see even in a medium-ish size suburb. Like, that's, like, a small town thing. Like, it reminds me a little bit of, like, Steven Universe, because there's also a mayor who has a truck with a, what's it called? One of those loudspeakers on top of it that just goes around. It also kind of reminds me of Back to the Future, too. Back to the Future has that, too. Right? What's his name? What's the mayor's name in that one? Do you know?
I don't remember, Maggie.
But it's the, you know what I'm talking about if you've seen the film. It's the guy. It's the guy who was like, you know, he's like, it doesn't matter. Anyway, sorry, I was like, I don't want to go off on a tangent. But, I don't know, I like that whole small town feeling. And you just keep getting that too, just through her, like, the first day we hang out as an audience with Mitsuo. We just get the, like, we totally understand, like, the feel of her world.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, Tessie is like, oh yeah, let's go to a cafe. And, like, I can't remember her name. What's her name? Something with an S, right? The friend's name, you know.
Yeah, I know who you mean. Tessie's
not girlfriend, but, like, later, fiance. Anyway, Tessie's... I should look up her name. I should just Google it. But, you know, Mitsuo and her other, like, girl space friend are just like, oh, there's a cafe? And they're, like, losing their minds. And then, like, you just get a cut to, like, a vending machine in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, this is the, you know... the boring little town that she comes from, but obviously it's beautiful and peaceful in its own way compared to the city, right? It's like the whole, like, grass is greener on the other side thing, where they're like, oh, this place is so boring, there's nowhere to eat, for some reason there's two bars next to each other. Like, I love that little montage they do when they're, like, complaining about the town, and it's just like, why are there just two bars next to each other? And, like, stupid stuff like that, like, you know, one little grocery store, like, It's great, but it's also, like, kind of, like, you see it from the other perspective, like, this is, like, really, like, it's beautifully quaint, too.
Yeah,
I don't know. Definitely. It was, that was very, the montage was very effective for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did a really good job at setting up, like, your feelings about the places. The settings were really, they felt like places you had been.
Yeah.
They felt really familiar.
They're very good at setting up location. They don't do it as much with Tokyo, but they definitely do it a little bit. And that was nice too.
You don't get like the quaintness, obviously. But you do get the sense of wonder.
Yeah,
that Mitsuha's feeling, because she's like, "Oh my god, there's so many people. Look at this beautiful
city. It's so shiny and like." I mean, again, this is the whole city versus country. You know, city girl goes to the, country girl goes to the city, city boy goes to the country, and they're both like, wow, it's so beautiful. Like, that's been done before, but, like, I still love it.
It still works, because it's still resonant, I think, in everyone's life today.
Yeah.
Because you either grow up in one of those places generally.
I mean, we're both from the suburbs. Well, I mean,
somewhere in between, but you know
what I mean. We're both from the suburbs, so, like, I don't think we quite have that same experience. But, like, I don't know this for sure, but I have a feeling that suburbs aren't as prevalent in Japan. Or not this kind of suburb. There was no, like, post-World War II, there was a lot of housing development. Like, that's not a thing, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a thing in Japan. I think they're just trying to recover from the war. So her name, the friend's name is Sayaka, but I don't think they say her name that much, which is why I forgot it, because they say Tetsu's name a lot, but anyway. So Sayaka is she is Tetsu's, I guess, aren't they fiancés or engaged at the end of the movie? I don't know, something like that, right? Because they're talking about weddings or something.
Yeah.
But, like, obviously you saw that. Like, B couple was such an obvious B couple, right?
It was.
Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I feel like B couples are very, like, that's not a new concept, but I feel like I see a lot more A couple and B couples in Japanese media. Like, there's almost always a B couple in the Japanese media that I consume, but it's not as guaranteed in, like, Western media, I feel.
That's interesting. Yeah, I never thought of it like that, but you're right.
I'm right, right? Like, I don't know why that's more a prominent trope in East Asian media, but it feels like there's almost always a B couple in a K-drama or a Japanese anime or something.
Yeah.
There's always a B couple.
I feel like in American TV shows, that's true, but in movies, you don't really see it. Yeah,
because they just spend more time talking about the main couple or whatever. It's like, anyway, sorry.
And developing quirky side characters.
Yeah, quirky is right. Everett Multiverse. What does that mean? What?
I love Everett. You trying to decipher your own notes. Well, I took these entertaining.
Notes a long time ago. Like, I took these notes weeks ago. Everett Multiverse. Okay, no idea what that means. Moving on. I wrote down tradition, because, like, that is also kind of what the first half with Mitsu is all about. It's, like, it's beautiful and quaint, but also everything is very, like, traditional, right? So when she passes by her dad, who's doing his little mayoral whatever thing, and he, like, calls her out on, like, slouching or something, and, like, all the townspeople are like, look at what a strict... like, father, like, he is such a good authority figure, like, I respect him. Like, I was like, oh my god, is this, like, super, like, traditional old school or what? But, like, it makes sense. Like, you do literally have people who, I mean, I'm assuming, like, they are, some of them are farmers, and, like, they're more, like, blue-collar tradespeople and such. So it's like, you know, this ain't Tokyo, so... But anyway, I like that. Like, that whole... I really enjoyed the whole city-country juxtaposition.
Yeah, I did as well. Yeah. It was interesting. I'm completely shifting, but you reminded me. Because, like, Mitsuha is arguably the main character.
Yeah, I think she's more important to the integral plot than Taki.
I think you get a lot more of what she's feeling early on, so you kind of latch on to her.
Yeah, yeah.
That said, I just realized I say that said a lot.
It's okay.
I did that was just a revelation. That said, she doesn't really have much to do once the plot turns, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it kind of flips over from Mitsuha to Taki.
Mm-hmm. But she doesn't have any agency, really.
Hmm. Can you elaborate?
Well, I mean, she does play the kind of know-nothing farm girl whatever in the beginning. But that's not the problem. And I don't know if this is even necessarily a problem in this movie. I just think of it more of a problem in a larger cultural context. Because Mitsuha is the main character until things have to happen, in which she has to step out of the way. In this case, she literally dies. Mm-hmm. And the main male character has to essentially save the day and do all of the action.
I don't know if he does all of the action. I kind of see your point, but I also feel like I can think of some points to refute your point.
Because... I mean, it's not...
Yeah.
It's not, like, completely black and white.
Right.
But I would say that he drives the plot forward in the second half, and she drives the plot... Fate drives the plot forward in the first half, technically. Yeah. But he is really the push in the second half. Mm. She isn't even really there.
She's literally dead.
Well, yeah, awkward. She's
literally dead.
And I see
that, yeah.
I don't think this is a problem for this film. It's only a problem when I think about it in a greater, like...
I mean, what are some other examples you can think of in other films or shows that has that kind of similar thing?
Just kind of, like, the gender divide, I guess.
Do you have any specific examples, though? Because I'm struggling to think of anything off the top of my head that's concrete.
The things that keep coming into my head aren't Japanese... That's but fine. They're Korean good. Dramas.
Okay.
Which is...
But have the same thing where it flips to the guy.
Once yeah, for the beginning action-y. Is often the main character is the woman. And it's more romantic. And there will be some plot. But the plot, whatever it is, usually has to do with a company or about spying or whatever.
Right.
It's always centered around... the guy.
Right, because the woman can't take part in that sphere.
Right, and there's a point in the plot where essentially, for some reason, the girl has to step away and then it's the guy's time to fix everything. Oh man, I can think of
one
too.
What's that stupid one with the snail or whatever? Doesn't that happen too? Like, she literally gets amnesia or whatever? Like, and she was like a competent person before, but then she is rendered incompetent due to plot.
Basically.
What's that one called? I don't know if we can link to it in the notes.
I'm gonna look it up.
Okay. If we remember, we'll put it in the show notes. But there is a Korean drama that I wouldn't say I watched it, because I was more like... I would walk past Melissa and friends watching it, and I would, like, throw in some snarky comments and then leave. That's kind of my extent to being involved in watching that. Fated to Love You, okay.
Which was originally not Korean, I believe. Ugh, I can't remember where it came from originally.
It's probably East Asian, though.
No, it is, definitely. I just can't remember quite which country it originally came from, but I watched the Korean version.
Is this an East Asian trope, or would you say this is a, like, international trope?
I noticed it most obviously in East Asian media.
Okay.
I think it's prevalent, at least... in the American media that I consume as well.
Uh-huh.
I think it's just they hide it better.
It's not
They at least pretend to make it like, oh, well, he has to save the day now, and here's a good reason.
I'm trying to think of different examples. Does Hunger Games do it?
In the first one, Hunger Games does not.
Okay. Hunger Games. I was like, what about PETA? But then I was like, oh, PETA doesn't do anything.
No, so Hunger whatever. Games is actually a really good example of where,
avoiding
yeah,
that.
Where the main character is a girl and she basically mostly retains her own agency, even though she's being controlled
manipulated,
by, like,
the government and everything else. Yeah.
The government. The government. Capital G government.
Okay.
But it was just like,
I'm sure there are examples. I can't think of anything super obvious, but I'm sure there are American examples.
Well, I mean, I think of a lot of some of the older Disney movies.
Disney, yeah. Disney
yeah, like that, yeah. Like Sleeping Beauty, for example. Like, Aurora is the main character until the dragon
but that
comes.
Sleeping Beauty is super old.
It's from the 50s, I think.
I would consider that super old.
Well, yeah, but that was just an example.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Disney definitely does that.
Recent Disney has been much better about it, though. I will give it that. Again.
Does it happen in Tangled? Doesn't she get, like, kidnapped or whatever?
I don't remember. I only saw Tangled
once. I don't remember. It's been a while. Okay.
But, again, I don't think this is a problem in this movie. Like, it was just a nice opportunity to bring it up.
Yeah, you just remembered that this is an issue that you've seen in other movies.
Right.
Where it
a one-time,
shifts from, yeah.
A one-time thing isn't a problem. It's the pattern, which I just notice.
Huh, that is really interesting. Yeah, for me, I think the movie, while it does have some of those issues, I think it more or less subverts it, because in the end, right after they meet at the edge of that, as you called it, that weird dome thing, that, like, it was more of, like, a dome crater in the... They're on the edge of the crater, right? And they have that weird moment where they're kind of seeing each other. And then Taki disappears.
Yeah.
And then Mitsuha is back in her own body. I think that the reason why this doesn't fall into that category and it subverts it is because Mitsuha is kind of forced to take charge and have agency in order to save the town, right? Because she has to... Like, we see earlier, before the swap happens... Taki in Mitsuha's body, goes kind of ballistic on her father, grabs him by the tie, and, like, basically assaults him. And that obviously didn't work.
Then actually, technically, he had peppered him.
Oh my god, Melissa, I cannot with you today. You stop that. You stop that. That grin, that smug grin on your face. You stop that right now. Okay, so anyway, he attacks. Are you going to make stupid pun about tax? No, don't do it. Okay, he attacks Mitsuha's father, and that doesn't go over well. But later on, when everything is, like, dire, it's, like, the 11th hour, everyone's going to die, like, she goes back to her father's office, and I guess somehow off-screen, I almost wish it was on-screen, but somehow
well,
off-screen...
Well, that's exactly you partially helped my point.
Yeah.
Because
if it was
she
on-screen,
does,
that would have been better.
She has agency in that moment. But we don't even see it. It's off screen.
Yeah.
We don't even see her own triumph.
I think if we had seen that, if it had not cut away, if it was, well, I wonder. Didn't they try to do that to amp up the suspense? Like, oh, we don't know if it worked or not. But yeah, point is, we actually do not. Even though she does have a moment of agency, we don't get to see that. So actually, point to you, Melissa. You're right about that. But I mean, again, I think. It's not 100%, like,
no, definitely
wins, because she did have to, she had to change her behavior, right? Because in the past,
exactly.
She kind of just, like, would walk past and kind of just defer to her father because, you know, that's just how it goes, but she had to really step up and, you know, in order to save the town, she had to speak up against him, right? But, you're right, that is cut away from, I mean, you also have to take into account, like, again, East Asian cultural values, like, deferring to your parents.
Yeah, no.
Like, I have to wonder if that's also another reason why we cut away, because, like, it's not... okay. I'll write down the time code. It's not, like, you're not supposed to defy your parents, right? Sorry,
right.
Let me restate that, because you're not supposed to defy your parents, right? So,
mm-hmm.
Maybe that's another reason why we cut away. Especially,
mm-hmm.
You're gonna have a daughter... defy her father, like, unacceptable. So I wonder if that's also another reason why. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think it's completely justified because she's trying to save the town, but...
Yeah. And it did amp up tension.
Yeah.
So it did succeed in that purpose.
maybe I shouldn't eat while I'm doing this. I was just like,
wait, I can hear your crunching, Magatha.
No! Okay, let me just finish crunching on this one thing. I don't know if I should cut this or not. Why did he give me, like, the loudest fruit to eat? Oh my gosh. Stop mocking me.
It's way too easy.
You want to say something while I eat my pears?
Oh, it's a pear?
You didn't know what it was? Oh, I guess he peeled it, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. I thought it was an apple, but whatever. Your name.
Very helpful, Melissa. Thanks for that. Okay, we're gonna go back to this because apparently Melissa does not know how to ad-lib about stuff she's seen weeks in advance. Alright. So, one thing I absolutely love about this movie is the sliding door motif. I don't know if you notice this, but there's a lot of times where the camera will be, like, in the middle of a sliding door, and the door will come at you.
Yeah. Yeah, art. Now that you mention art. It.
They do it a lot. And I like it for a lot of reasons. I like it because... And I even noticed this when I saw it in April, and I remember I was, like, freaking out about the door thing. I like it because it works both artistically and thematically. So, artistically, it's really cool because in real life, you can't actually film that. You can't film a door shutting. I mean, you could, but it's just really complicated. So, you don't really see that kind of shot a lot. Mm-hmm. You can do that, obviously, in an animated film because you can draw anything. So that's, artistically it's really cool. And the reason why it works thematically is just because this whole movie's about, like, duality, right? And, like, two different sides, two different worlds, whatever. So the door kind of symbolizes, like, you know, like, I guess, like, it could either be, like, you know, two worlds and that kind of connection is cutting off.
Yeah.
Or, I'm trying to think
what or transition.
Yeah, or transition.
Love is an open door, actually.
Oh my god. But anyway, I really like the sliding door motif. And it also kind of reminds me, it's not a door per se, but it's also... there's like an invisible sliding door moment with the... when they're talking on the edge of the dome crater. And then she disappears. Like, that's like an invisible sliding door. But yeah. I like it a lot. I like the door thing a lot.
I wish I could do that in some conversations.
Bye! Teleport out.
I really liked that part. It's jumping way ahead, but I really liked that it just cut out in the middle.
It just gets you. It gets you right in the gut, man.
Because you don't expect it. You expect to get the resolution, and then, like...
There is none.
There is none.
You just have to hope that, you know, that the plan works out. And God, you know, that would suck to be Taki, and just, like, she just disappears, and you just have to, like... sleep for a night on a cold, abandoned mountaintop, and then just, like, kind of sort of figure out how to get back to Tokyo with half your memory. Like, that must be kind of terrifying. But,
yeah,
he survived, so I guess it was all okay.
Yeah. It did make me sad, though, that it took so long for them to find each other again, though.
Yeah.
At the end. It was like, there's so much, like, lost time there.
Yeah, but they also spent a good amount of time, I mean, literally, in each other's bodies.
Like, well, yes.
I don't think you can get much closer to a person than that. But
by the end of the film, do they really even remember that?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, here's the thing that I read. It was a fan theory, and I actually really like the fan theory because I think it does make a lot of sense. It's not, like, a crazy fan theory. It's, like, a plausible fan theory. That
everything is made of cabbages.
Everything is made out of what?
Cabbages.
Cabbages?
It has to be a fan theory somewhere.
No. Although I feel I'm going to avoid going on a tangent. I'm going to stop myself right now. So one of the fan theories I really enjoyed, and I think it's very reasonable and makes a lot of sense, is, like, we see in film, right, there's a panning shot of, like, a bunch of photos, or maybe, I think they're photos, of her ancestors, right, who have run the temple.
Yeah.
And presumably... they also have this switching... they've done this switching thing with another person, right? Because even Mitsuo's grandmother's like, oh yeah, like, I think I kind of remember I did the switching thing a long time ago, but it's been such a long time, I don't remember the person anymore, blah, blah, blah. So this is a thing that's... this is some kind of spiritual power that's been passed down in the family line, right? And they also do talk a little bit about in one of the early temple scenes, how, like, you know, sometimes tradition continues, but you lose the information, like, surrounding that tradition.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I thought was really cool. I really enjoyed that. Yeah, no, that's a really interesting
point.
And someone pointed out, like, oh, maybe what the reason why her family or people in that line get this power to switch with someone is so when the next comet hit, because the comet has hit that place before, when the next comet hits, the switching thing is kind of almost like a failsafe so that they can save the town and save the people in that town.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which works for me. I don't know if I fully explained it. I don't know if there's any problems you have with that theory. Yeah. But I like it, because I think that makes sense, right? Because, like, this comet, it comes every however many thousands of years. It basically hit the same place again this time. So the reason why they switch with another person who is far away, but not that far away, and at a different time, and not at the same time, is so they can help prevent this tragedy from happening should it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, so that's why they were even switching in the first place. I mean, yes, they're in love and whatever, but it's because it's that reason why that is happening even, and why that that's happened to her relatives or her ancestors was so if it happened again, they could save the town and save the people. So that explains why there's a time gap and why there's also a distance gap.
Yeah, that does cool. make sense. We don't know anything about the other switches.
Yeah. We don't know.
So it
we
is
don't know
making,
else.
Like, assumptions. But, yeah, oh, no. No, that is interesting.
I like that theory a lot. I think that makes a lot of sense. But, again, it is a lot of conjecture, so.
Oh, yeah. Before I forget.
What?
I need to point out something that I read recently, which is there is a live-action remake in the works.
Oh, no, don't do it.
I didn't come up with it.
No, I'm just saying that in general to the world, not to, like, you specifically.
Me, I'm the one who designed it.
It's all your fault. It is me. I just, like, some things just need to be left alone.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't...
They're just trying to capitalize off the success and the money, dude.
I mean...
Because this was wildly popular. I don't think anyone expected this to get this popular.
Yeah.
Because people were, like, being like, oh, it's, like, the next Miyazaki. And then even the guy was like, don't say that. That's chill. A little bit much. Yeah.
Yeah, but that'll be interesting.
I don't want to... I like it the way it is. I think it works the way it works now. I don't really have any desire to see a live-action version. I don't need to see a live-action guy squishing someone's boobs to get... Like, no, dude. Like, I don't need that in my life. No. Go away. Anyway, getting back to the film. Again, so this is my second time watching it. So, after the... You know, like, Mitsuha, we see kind of her daily life stuff, and we learn more about the temple, and kind of the religious duties that she and her sister have. And, you know, her classmates make fun of her for making the... I don't know the name of it. I don't know how to pronounce it. But the sake with, like, with her, like, you know, saliva. Yeah. And, you know, it ferments and whatever. They make fun of her for that. And then she's, like, obviously upset. And she's, like, you know, she runs down the steps dramatically to that, like, that red Tori gate and just, like, kind of screams, like, you know, I want to be reborn as a boy in my next life. Be careful what you wish for, girl. Because that's literally what happened. So, like, she literally dies and is reborn, right? I don't know if... I don't think... They didn't start switching right after the comet, right? No, it was like a 3-year gap, I think.
Yes.
Something like that. But yeah, she was eventually reborn. Sort of, kind of, ha ha ha, reborn.
Yeah, in, hardy har har.
Hardy har har. In a... In the boy... what did she even ask for specifically? Was it like, I want to be like a cute boy or something? Something
stupid like that?
In the city.
Does she name drop Tokyo or does she just say, like, big city?
Something like that. But she was kind of specific, so...
Yeah.
You know. Like, hold on. I want to look up the
And I want my name to be Taki.
Does Taki mean octopus? I'm only probably getting that wrong. But anyway, your name script? I just want to, like... I want to find out what she actually says. Oh, wait. I forgot. You can't write your name script. That's, like, so generic.
Your name, well, while you figure that out.
Yes.
I should give you a few more details. It's apparently an American adaptation. It was announced.
Oh, no.
September 27th. No. With producer J.J. Abrams.
Wait. I heard about this. I think I heard about this, and I had the same reaction. I was like, don't do it. Don't do it, bruh.
And they announced a screenwriter, Eric Hesserer. Blah, blah, blah. Released by Paramount Pictures and Bad Robot Productions. Will it happen? I don't know, but you know,
don't do it.
That could happen.
Okay. No, no, no. She does. She's very specific. This girl knows how to make a wish. Okay. So according to
this is
no. I have the quote here. I hope. Yeah. I hope this is correct. I hate this town. I hate this life. Please make me a handsome Tokyo boy in my next life. So rule number one of wishmaking, be extremely specific. So she did a good job with number one. So yeah, handsome Tokyo boy in my next life. So with a great smartphone.
Yeah.
So she did well there. She did good, for herself. But anyway, that I mean obviously that's the kind of line that you're like, oh, like the second time you see the movie.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, I get it.
Or you could argue, perhaps, that she says it with such specificity because on some level she knows the connection that she is going to have.
Ooh, sorry. That is kind of interesting. And the whole thing about the Tory Gates, and I think I might have brought this up in one of our old episodes, but do you know what I mean when I say Tory Gate? It's like that red Japanese special kind of.
Yeah.
Look. It's a specific looking kind of gate. Yeah. So let me read off the wiki article, since I'm no expert and Wikipedia is more of an expert than I am. A Tori is a traditional Japanese gate most commonly found at the entrance of or within a Shinto shrine, where it symbolically marks the transition from the profane to the sacred. So obviously another thing adding into this, like, the symbolism of her, like, shouting that at the gate is, like, it's like, you know, the spiritual world to the mundane world or whatever.
More doors
symbolism. So I mean I think
not to be confused with more doors.
I'm making this too easy for you.
Yeah, make it a challenge.
But yeah, anyway, this film is beautiful. I think after she shouts that into the gate, there's a, if I remember correctly, I think there's like a time lapse where, it's nighttime when she shouts it, and then it time lapses. It's a gate, but the sky goes from night to morning really quick, and the beautiful music, like the guitar solo starts playing and stuff, and then I think we transition to the city. I think that's what
just
happens.
Just a city boy.
Born and raised in South Detroit.
Yes.
But yeah, and then one thing I noticed, and I guess it's not that big of a deal, but like we see Taki's dad for like 2 seconds, and then he never comes back again.
Yeah.
It's weird, because like Taki's almost like, again, I feel like in some ways his character isn't as fleshed out. Like we get more of him and the girl at the restaurant. Than him with anyone else.
Which is interesting
and odd.
That we get so much
family, friends, Mitsuha, and then like Taki really only with that one girl.
I mean, maybe it's supposed to show like his isolation or something. I don't know.
Feeling from it. But I like completely forgot he even had a father. And then once he popped back up again, I'm like, oh yeah, like, you're in here, but you're, like, not in here. You're here for, like, 2 seconds just to, like, give us context. Like, you have a father and you have to go to school. Like, that was literally the only context that he provided.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we don't even know anything about Taki. Like, where's his mom?
Yeah.
What's up with that? No, never addressed.
No, we don't know so much about him.
I think he's more of a blank slate than Mitsuha.
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe that's the point. Maybe he's supposed to be a blank slate. Like, you just project onto him for the later half of the film.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I can kind of see that.
Anyway, so I just wrote down Taki's dad? Because, like, again, I completely forgot he was in the film at all. And then I was like, you're really only here for, like, giving a little bit of context. And then we never see him again.
He's just, like, there to, like, be like, yep, you don't live on your own.
Right, right.
And that's it.
Yeah. And then we, later on, we get, hold on. Oh, I totally, I think I skipped some, like, a scene when we get, Mitsuha in Taki's body the first time and kind of going through her school day. But the scene cracks me up every time I see it. Like, I think when I saw it in theaters, I straight up cackled and, like, died a little bit. It's the scene where, it's like, again, Mitsuha's first day in Taki's body at school with the friends. They're eating, I guess, lunch in the, on the gym floor or whatever. And she's, like, using the wrong pronouns. So first she does, like, the feminine pronoun, and then she does the polite male pronoun, and then she does the, I guess, arrogant, impolite male pronoun. Because, like, with every passing different pronoun, the friends are more and more confused. And I just, it killed, the comedic timing is excellent. They're just, she's like, watashi, huh? And then whatever the other one is, and huh? Or a nod. Like, it's just too good. I was dying.
Yeah, it was really good.
I love that
scene
so much. I love that scene so much.
I think it speaks to how good it was that it, even, like, it transcended. Like, I knew what they were getting at, and, like, it was very, it was still funny to me.
Well, I think in the subs, don't they do something like female pronoun or something? In the subs, I can't remember if they did it or not. I think they did.
But, like, I feel like humor is one of those things that doesn't necessarily translate very well.
Well, the visual gag is what sold it, I think, too. The whole, like, huh? Huh? Correct. It was so good. I just killed me. But yeah, I mean, speaking of pronouns, someone brought this up. I don't think it's super intense because it is in Japan, which is, East Asian culture is just a little bit more conservative in general. But they brought up how the film kind of does some interesting stuff with gender and kind of sexuality. Not too much, but like a little bit. Because, like, you know, what's all this with, like, Mitsuha trying to set Taki up with a date with this girl? Like, that's kind of interesting. That's a little strange. And then the whole thing about the friend being like, oh, he was so cute the other day. And the other like, excuse you? But, like, there is some, like, isn't it, like, completely... this is gonna sound so weird, but it's not completely heterosexual all the time. Like, so that's, like, kind of an interesting thing where they kind of... Again, it's not super direct, because, like, again, this is a culture that's a little bit more conservative, but, you know, there's hints of that, too. Like, weird stuff with, where they're kind of messing around with gender. Because, I mean, they're body swapping, so how could they not? But
that's half the fun.
But, yeah, that's kind of in the movie. There's a little bit of that in the movie. And I think someone else pointed out, and I don't know how much I agree with this, but... how usually in body swap stories, everything's kind of more played for... I don't know if this is accurate. I might be thinking about a different body swap story. But I think they were saying, like, usually things are a little bit more played for laughs, but this is a little bit more, like... No, I definitely think about a different body swap story, because this is pretty lighthearted. This film's pretty lighthearted about body swapping. But there's another body swap media, or some kind of media, whether it was a story or TV show or something, where it was... Oh, I know what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about Gravity Falls. That's what I'm thinking about. There's a body swap episode in Gravity Falls where Dipper and Mabel, they're twin, fraternal twins, brother and sister, they swap bodies, but they kind of react more in horror than like, surprise, confusion. Because, like, ew, I'm in my, you know, fraternal twins body, ew. That's a little bit more played for more realistic horror than most body swap. most body swap things, like, I guess the character kind of just goes with it, and it's more funny, but, like...
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Gravity Falls is, like, horror. It's a kid's show. But it's played a little bit more, I guess a little bit more realistically. Like, this is kind of a horrible situation.
Right, because if it happened actually in real life...
You would hate it.
Yeah, it would be awful, and you'd spend the whole time being like, this isn't really happening.
Yeah, so that's like a little...
A lot of plots are like that, actually, in movies and books and whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, that was a tangent. I don't know why I thought that was about... I guess I just consume too much body swap media.
It is a good, solid,
it's a fun trope. It's a solid quality trope. Quality yeah. trope right there.
I love okay. me a good body swap story.
Let's see. I think I don't really talk too much in my notes about the whole Taki situation. I think that's all pretty self-explanatory. There's nothing really revelatory about that. I mean, except for, I guess, Mitsuha is obviously a kinder person, and maybe that's just, like, again, maybe it's to do with gender, right? Like, when it comes to, like, you know, socialization and how, you know, females are socialized versus males, like, we're expected to be nicer and kinder, and maybe that's the reason why she comes across more that way when she is in Taki's body or swapping with him, because the other characters are like, oh, yeah, you're, like, cuter slash nicer when you're not you, which, ouch. But, you know, again, maybe that has to do with gender roles. Maybe that's personality. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But
our sample size is relatively small.
Yeah.
I'm such a nerd.
You're such a nerd. Okay. My next couple notes are about the Musubi scene. The first time Mitsuha, her sister, and her grandmother kind of go up to the to the tree. Or I guess where the quote-unquote body of the god is.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have anything you want to talk about before that. I don't know if you... I know you're...
We are not working in a chronological fashion, so just go for it. I am working in a
chronological fashion. Okay, so I guess we'll go for it. Because I feel like this episode is going to be very long. But, okay, so we have the Musubi scene. I really liked that. I just thought, like, the whole concept of it was... Excuse me. The whole concept of it was really beautiful. So do you remember what that was, or do I have to refresh your memory?
No, I remember it. It was nice.
It was talking about, like, harmony and togetherness, right? So, like,
yeah, it felt very, like, thematically poignant.
Yeah. But I enjoyed that a lot.
It was, like, an interesting, like, slowdown where, although it became plot relevant later on, I still feel like it's a much slower method of storytelling. Where you wouldn't necessarily get that slowdown scene in a comparable American telling.
Yeah.
But I appreciated it because it gave you, like, time to reflect, and it did, in fact, become important. So yeah. That's good, too.
I think there's I guess, like, again, in, like, non-Western media, but especially non-American media or, like, Japanese media, it just feels like reflection is a lot more important. Which, yeah. Like, cultural values. but, yeah, reflection is more important. So it kind of comes across in the cinema, too. The scenery in that shot as they were climbing the mountain was so beautiful. Oh, my goodness. Just gorgeous. I also like how they're talking about... I think this is one of the scenes when they're in Mitsuo's classroom, but the teacher is talking about, and again, this comes into play later in the story, but she's talking about Twilight and...
Yeah.
Again, there's some, like, linguistics stuff going on there. I wish I wrote it down syllable for syllable, but she's talking about, you know, how, I guess, like, the root word for... Was it something like, who are you, or something like that, comes from Twilight, because you can't tell who someone is when it's that dark? Something along those lines. I didn't write it down word for word, because I didn't want to pause the movie, but let's see if I can find it later. But she talks about that, and I was like, okay, yeah, that works thematically for later on in the movie, because that's the whole scene at the dome crater is...
Right.
They can see each other because it's Twilight. It's that weird in-between time, between worlds, but also between, like... Who are you? Because, like, also later on, right, they forget each other, or they keep forgetting each other, because, I mean, I guess magic, but...
Basically.
But, you know, they're in that weird in-between where it's, like, who are you, or slash you kind of are me, and I'm kind of you, like, weirdness.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I like the whole Twilight thing. I wrote down nostalgia, but I don't know why I wrote down nostalgia. So I'm just gonna move on from that. And I think later on there's a whole thing where... Right. It's like like, she's trying to call... I'm just, like, trying to make sense of my notes, because I understand... well, like, I understand what they're... Because there's just, there's, like, scenes where I'm not writing stuff for a while, so then I skip ahead.
Anyway, no, that makes sense.
You know, there's the whole... hold up. Before we go any further, what did you... When the first time you watched it, or I guess the only time you watched it, when you, what was your reaction when they're at the festival, Mitsuha and her friends are at the festival, they see that she just chopped her hair off, and then they go look at the stars, and then it cuts back to Taki immediately with that weird noise. Like, what did you think of that the first time you saw that? Because I didn't really know what to make of it when I saw it, and I kind of just was like, oh, that was weird. I guess I'll see what that means later.
That's exactly the way that I took it.
Yeah.
Because it is a movie where you have to keep up. You can't spend too much time dawdling, thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's relatively good at explaining everything. You just have to give it patience.
Yeah, you have to wait for the payoff.
Right. So in this case, I didn't, like, contemplate too much about it.
But you didn't think... oh, they just got struck by the meteor and we're going to flash forward 3 years. Like, you didn't think that, right?
Of course that's what I thought, Manny. That was sarcasm.
I understood that that was sarcasm. Even I knew that. But yeah, I remember when I saw that, I felt a little bit odd about it because I was like, that noise that it made when it cut off was not a very... what's the word I'm looking for?
Pleasant?
Yeah, pleasant. But, like, yeah, it wasn't very, what's the opposite of alarming? Oh, no, I guess it's alarming. Oh, no, alarming's too strong.
Foreboding? You know what
I mean? It was kind of foreboding, I guess. There's a better word, but I'll go with foreboding for now. But the sound was a little bit foreboding, and I was like, why are we zooming into her somewhat scared-looking eyes, like... it's not making me feel too good, but, I mean, it's not like we saw the explosion that happened.
Right.
Right. So, like, that, and then we immediately cut to Taki, so I was just like, okay, I guess I'll go with this, but I don't know what just happened. So I like how later on the revelation's like, oh, snap, like, she literally died. Which is what gets you the first time you watch it. Again, I don't think it was as powerful the second time around.
But it's nice because you learn... along with the main character.
Yeah.
Like, you learn along with Taki about what's going on.
Right. And then, so Taki's, he realizes that he, for some reason, to him, he doesn't know why this happened, but he's no longer switching with Mitsuha, right?
Right.
He still remembers her, but he can't, and he's trying to, like, for some reason, they exchanged phone numbers, but they never called each other, like, what? And I call this the rule of catfish. You gotta call the person, and if you can't make contact, something is very wrong. Rule of catfish right there. So he tries calling her after they're no longer swapping, and that doesn't work. And it doesn't work because her phone's been out of service for 3 years.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Awkward.
Awkward. And he's calling her on the bridge, and later on, or should I say in the past, earlier, confusing timelines... earlier, 3 years earlier, in fact, Mitsuha was on the same bridge trying to call him, and that wasn't working because his phone was not connected yet. So that was kind of a nice touch that they were on the same bridge, but just at the wrong time.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was star-crossed lovers. Am I right?
It's so painful.
It is.
Like, it's good and pure, but so painful.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is... I think this might have been after... I think this was after he's standing on the bridge calling her for hours. But there's a nice shot of this, like, bisected moon. And I was like, ooh, symbolism. The connection's no longer there.
Yeah. What did you think of all of the crying?
All the crying? Oh, like, he's crying when he wakes up or whatever?
Yeah, like, they would cry as they woke up, especially towards, like, when they reached their later, like, the last time they switched.
Oh, I guess I didn't really read too much into it. I just thought it was, like, your typical dramatic thing. But, like, I guess if you want me to read more into it, I guess it's kind of like, Oh, I don't know. I don't really know if there's too much of a deeper meaning. Maybe.
Because
are you
when.
About, are you talking about after they save the town crying? Is that what
no.
you're talking about? Okay.
No,
that,
because.
I feel like I can talk a little bit about that. But.
Well, I mean, if you want to, go for it. But
I feel like that's kind of more like mourning that they feel like, you know, like they're constantly feel like they're searching for something, but they can never find it. That I can kind of connect to or think a little more deeply about the crying thing. I don't know if they cry after they save the town. But beforehand, I don't know. I just thought...
It's
well,
almost
the
like they know somewhere deep inside themselves that, like,
something
their connection is broken.
Maybe. Maybe that's what it is. I thought with Mitsuo, I thought it was more of a straightforward, like, oh, like, he is... Like, I'm on the outside, I'm kind of thinking that I'm happy for him that I arranged this date, but internally I'm very upset about it. Because we're soulmates.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's how I read that. Because I thought that was pretty obvious. But you read it differently. You thought it was the connection breaking.
Well, I didn't know exactly what it was when I first watched it. But looking back, it kind of makes me think. Because he wakes up crying, too.
When's that, though? Is that after she dies?
That might be after she dies.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's when that happens. Because it was pretty linear. Like, they went on a date, and then she wakes up crying. I mean, that's pretty... To me, that was pretty straightforward. Like, she's upset because he's on the date. She says that she wishes she was on the date, but I don't really know if that's true. But, you know, whatever. So that's a thing.
Yeah.
And... So that's what I make about the crying thing. I can't remember if they cry later, but...
It did seem to be a running theme, and...
Was there a lot of crying? I don't remember there being that much crying.
I mean, not like a lot of crying, but it was crying out of context.
Oh, okay. Oh, right, like it would switch to them waking up crying and you're like, oh,
yeah.
I don't know why this was... Okay. Again, I think that's just the film messing with you, trying to make you be like, what's going on? What's happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you're like the characters, you don't know what's happening the first time you're watching the film. I'm so sure that happens in Dreamless too. I mean, they do know why they're crying because they don't have the memory loss thing. But
right.
Anyway, So I kind of enjoyed that the two friends. So one of Taki's male friends and then the woman from the restaurant. They tag along when he kind of goes off to the country to search for Mitsuo. And I just love that the montage is like. Him very serious because they add levity to it, which is good. But
yeah,
they're like Taki is seriously searching for the town. Like you literally see him; he's spending like all his nights just like drawing. Because I guess he's an architect kind of guy. He's like drawing the town from memory, like some insane like prodigy. And like he's sweating, drinking water. Like it's like the whole thing. And like he goes out; he sets off on this journey to find the town. He's like speaking seriously to people. In the background, but he's in the background. In the foreground is just his friends, just like eating all kinds of food, just enjoying themselves. Like, that was great. They're not really there to help him. They're just there to like be like
supervise,
light in the moon, and just eat all the food, which is great.
Yeah. And like in that particular scene, you related to both of them because you also wanted to find out the truth, but
food,
levity. I always appreciate that.
Yeah. I wrote down echoing bird calls. Why did I write that down? I guess I like the echoing bird calls. And also, I wrote down that there were three craters. There was not two craters. There was three craters. So, I think...
This
adds more to the theory. So, like, the three craters are... The third one was when it struck and killed... You know, hundreds of residents, and one of those residents was Mitsuo. The second time, I think, was that... Because one of the craters was a lake.
Right, yeah.
Which is why you don't immediately think, oh, there's three craters. You think it's two craters and a lake. So, again, I think that reinforces that fan theory that this is an area that gets struck by the crater every 1,000 or so years. And that's why this whole weird magic thing
Yeah, that kind of works for me.
Yeah.
I don't know why lightning keeps striking there, but
yeah, I think people are saying like realistically, that's not how like meteoroids work, but for the purposes of this story, that's
well, how I don't it think works. There's time travel either, so
magical time travel.
Though I guess we wouldn't know, would we?
I wrote. Oh yeah, so this is so we you know, in this in terms of the story plot, Taki finally finds someone. He's just like at a diner or whatever the Japanese equivalent of a diner is, and he just has his drawings out. He's ready to give up, obviously. It only ever happens when the hero's about to give up. Yep. And then, you know, one of the waitresses is like, oh, that looks like Itomori. I think that's the name of the town, right? Itomori. And, the you know, the chef is like, or the cook is like, yeah, that's like a really good example. And Taki's like, oh, yeah, like, can you show me where that is? And they're like, bruh, like, everyone died there 3 years ago.
Awkward. I do
not remember this being a thing. So
which, legitimately, how does he not remember it being a thing? But
well, I think one thing that I liked about this movie, too, I think this kind of, it kind of goes into the whole, in terms of, like, what is this movie saying about the human condition? It's like, we forget about things. Like, even really big, important things, like a natural disaster hitting a town in our country, like, we're gonna forget about it to some degree 3 years later.
That is true.
So, and, like, Japan, obviously, being an island that's, like, you know, it's an island, so it's situated on top of a volcanic fault. And it's, like, it's surrounded by water, so it's gonna get hit by, like, typhoons and stuff. Like, it's experienced a lot of natural disasters. So, like, in Japan, like, they're used to natural disasters like this.
I mean, this is a pretty unique natural disaster.
Not a meteor, but, like, it's a, like, you know, a symbolic stand-in for...
Yeah.
Like, the numerous natural disasters that they go through all the time. So I like that, too, how, like, the memory thing's not just talking about, like, it's talking about human memory, how we forget even the most important things.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up, but I'm not remembering it right now.
human memory. Good one.
But
that was a really nice theme throughout, though, because that feeling of waking up and trying to hold on to your dream is so universal.
Yeah.
And it's just so relatable. And yeah. It's painful to watch, like, that slip away multiple times in this movie. Like, when it's every time they separate or wake up or whatever, it's... You relate to it extremely viscerally.
Yeah. What was your reaction when you saw that he wrote I love you on her hand? Or you're like, you idiot.
Like, dude!
Idiot!
That was not the point!
I almost wonder if the magic would have erased it anyway. Because the magic erased their electronic diary entries, so, like, why couldn't the magic have... It could have erased the name, too. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it could have.
I don't even know if him writing his name would have fixed anything.
I don't know, but it was worth a shot, okay?
Anyway.
But it was, like, more meaningful and adorable.
Yeah, and more dramatic. And, like, he wrote that he loved her, so that gave her the strength to run to her father's office. Like, yeah, I get it. But, yeah. So, he finds a town. It's been decimated. Do we then see the whole... imagery of, like, the whole town being, like, blown to smithereens or whatever. Like, I can't remember if that's when that happens.
Around then.
Yeah, we see the devastation that's occurred, and it's very, like... Well, hold on. I don't know, like, I might take this back, because I think... I'm not sure if Mulan was more better at doing this than this film, but it reminded me of that scene in Mulan. So, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Mulan, what are you doing? It's been almost 20
seriously.
Years. It's been almost 20 years. Watch the dang
Mulan
movie.
Mulan is phenomenal.
So I do not, there's no spoiler alert, because you had 20 years, or almost 20 years to watch it. But in Mulan, there's a scene that has, like, a kind of similar, like mood, the trope is called mood whiplash. It has a mood whiplash where we go from singing a beautiful, cheery military song about, you know, a girl worth fighting for, and then all of a sudden, actually, they just walked into a, not war zone, but a town that has been completely ransacked by the Huns, and it's everything's burned and charred, and like there's like one sad, creepy, ripped up doll or whatever.
Yeah.
And it just kills a mood entirely.
Yeah.
And I think that was
worth fighting.
Yeah. I don't know. That gets me every time that I watch Mulan. I'm just like, oh no. So this that kind of situation happens with Taki when he. Well, there's no singing, but they go to Itamori, and it just cuts to all the devastation, and it's like, oh my god, what the heck? And then the audience, you're like, you're kind of connecting the dots to what happened. You're like, yeah. Oh, the comet split off. I mean, they literally say it in the movie, but like, the comet split off unexpectedly, and then it impacted this town. So that was effective. And then, you know, we get this weird thing where, you know, for some reason, Taki's still determined to... He's like, there has to be something I can do. So then he goes to... I guess they call it the Underworld, right? Don't they call it that? Earlier on in the scene?
You don't know what I'm talking about. No, I know, so, I know what you mean, but I don't know what it's called.
But yeah, so he goes to the rock shrine thing. Where there's that tree in the... I think there's a tree, but there's like a tree in a cave. Not really a cave, but it's like two boulders that kind of form a little cave. In the middle of the crater. So he's like, I'm just gonna, I don't know why, I don't know how that works. And he tells his friends he's gonna go back up to Itamori.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm getting the timelines mixed up. So they see the town
devastation. That's not hard.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I know, right? He sees the devastation in the town, and then he goes to, I guess, the local library to do some research and sees in the name of the deceased or the names of the victims, he sees Tessie, I cannot remember her name, a girl, and Mitsuha, and that really shakes him, because, what the heck? And his friends are like, wait, what is going on? You're telling me that you talked to a girl who died 3 years ago?
What? Awkward.
So they stay the night at some, like, cheap, I guess, karaoke inn thing, and, you know, he has this, like, talk with that girl. But I don't know. I guess she's like kind of talky sounding board throughout this process.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about her character. I guess she was helpful sometimes.
She was there as the function.
Yeah, she wasn't really a character. Like, she wasn't a fully fleshed out character. But yeah, she was there to be a sounding board or whatever. And then he decides to, I guess, like, as one does, leave a note for your friend saying, I'll see you in Tokyo in a couple days or whatever. Sure. And then he goes off to... He finds that guy again who was from the town. Gets him to drive him up to the, you know, the dome.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he's like, okay, I guess I'm gonna try to go... I'm trying to remember what his thought process was. Was it like, oh, like, let me just try to... Because what was his thought process was like, I'm going to try to contact Mitsuha again? I don't know what his thought process was.
I don't know. I think he was just kind of desperate. And he thought, well, anything? This could work.
Right. Because I don't know why he decided that was the place to go. Anyway. So he has some food with him, but he like treks up there. Then he goes into the cave. So there's this funny, I don't know if it's a meme, but there was a funny little joke post I saw after I watched the movie. And it was, like, some stupid thing, like, what if he drank the wrong bottle and got the sister instead? And just, like, visions of her, like, being like, why are you being so weird touching your chest? anyway, I don't know if I can find it, but that was pretty funny. But he does remember, I guess, which bottle she, was hers, because I guess... He remembered where she put it? I don't know, man.
Wasn't he her
when at the time? They I think so.
Stored it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So he knew which one it was.
And that's then so we get confusing.
I know. And then we get a very interesting, shall we say, Space Odyssey 2001 style trip out on the alcohol.
Yes.
Because that thing has been fermenting for at least 3 years. So he drinks it. Not really. I don't know. I think, doesn't he like slip? He falls on his back. He sees the chalk drawings on the top of the not cave. Sort of cave. And that is, like, those are the stars, which I guess was supposed to kind of indicate that this is, again, this is a place that gets hit by the asteroid all the time, for whatever reason. And then I love how it turns from the chalk drawing into that rope and just goes seamlessly into that crazy, trippy animation thing of, I guess he's just, like, tripping out, but, like,
that whole sequence is so cool.
It was so beautiful. Really cool. And then that rope turns into, a, like, an umbilical cord, and then we get weird, more flashes of, like, Mitsuha's past, and her mother died because the mother must always die, and, you know. I did read an article recently, and it was not entitled The Mother Must Always Die, but it was basically, that's what it was talking about. Because we talked about episode one, The Father Must Die. Or was it, you know, one of our early episodes. So we get more flashbacks about Mitsuha's life and more backstory about the father, how the father was supposed to be a spiritual successor, but then after the mom died, he lost his belief and his faith, and then the sisters would take all that stuff. Again, we just learned so much about Mitsuha. We really don't know much about Taki. Blank slate. And then, I wrote something down that I noticed because it was the second time I watched it. So the thing about, you know how Mitsuha and Taki are switching throughout the movie? Mm-hmm. One thing I noticed was, like, I think, this is correct. I think someone was wearing a middle school uniform. I think that was Mitsuha. So in, I'm not 100% clear on how this works, just because I've just kind of seen anime just, like, on a cursory basis. I'm no expert on Japanese culture, but I'm pretty sure that they're equivalent to middle school and they're equivalent to high school. Like, they have different uniforms. Like, everyone's expected to wear a school uniform, but it seems to me, based on what I know, middle school uniforms are generally, like, you know, pants and a shirt, if you're a guy, or if you're a girl, it's, like, a skirt, a shirt, and, like, maybe, like, a vest on top of the shirt. Versus in high school, you generally have a blazer that goes on top of all that stuff. Like, middle schoolers don't wear blazers. So, at least in what I've seen in anime. So, one thing that kind of hints to the whole weird three-year gap thing, or so something is, like, which isn't super obvious, but it's kind of there, is, like, Mitsuha is wearing her, she's wearing a middle school uniform, but Taki's wearing a high school uniform. I might be mixing that. I might be mixing that up, actually. Wait, no, I'm totally messing that up. Sorry, that was stupid. I got confused by the timeline thing. Let me restate. That's not the case, because Mitsuha is a 12th grader, or whatever the equivalent of a 12th grader is. We're talking about graduation. So, no, I screwed up. I meant it the other way. I meant
I know
Taki
what you meant.
Is wearing a middle school uniform. He's not wearing, I don't think he's wearing a blazer or something. Or, you know what? I take it all back. I think
because
I'm
that would make the age gap even larger.
You know what? I think I'm just going to cut that. I think I just confused myself, because something about the flashback had a middle school uniform. Maybe it was just, like, her in middle school versus her now.
Yeah, maybe.
Just ignore me. That was a complete tangent. This is what happens when you see the movie, like, 2 weeks before. Okay. All right. I'm going to cut that. I'm going to cut that from the show. Just remind me if I forget. Let me write down the time code. Oh, my God. My voice is giving out. No.
Because it's been a while. We should probably wrap up. Yeah. I mean, unless you wanted to make it a two-parter.
I think I'm almost... No, it's not going to be a two-parter. And again, I'm going to cut all that stuff out. Okay. So, anyway, we get that whole amazing trippy scene in the knot cave, and then we also get, like, so that after that he goes outside and runs into Mitsuha, right? Is that am I getting this correct? No, I totally skipped the whole section where he's transferred into her body the day of the meteor strike,
right?
Sorry, I totally was like, wait, timeline, what? This movie, man. So, you know, Taki's in her body trying to let everyone know that, you know, the town's gonna get hit and they need to evacuate, and, you know, your typical high school let's do a plot happens.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly
anyway,
what you mean.
So let's do a plot. sorry. And I mean, that all kind of, I feel like it's not really important to elaborate on that, because I think we're both operating on under the assumption that you've seen this film. So that happens. And we also have to wrap this episode. So that happens, and then eventually the plan is kind of falling apart a little bit because he's not able to convince Mitsuo's father to evacuate the town. So he goes, he bikes, he steals, doesn't he steal Tessie's bike? He steals Tessie's bike, and bikes all the way up to he bikes up to the top of that dome for some reason. I don't really understand some of the motivations. I'm like, why are you going back there?
Yeah.
But anyway, he bikes up to the dome, and he's, I don't know, again, I don't know why he thinks he's gonna find Mitsuo up there, but whatever. It's because his body is still in the cave. I think, right? Something weird like that? I don't know if that works.
I don't know.
No, okay, so I think, again, the timelines get kind of confusing, but in present day, Taki's body is in the cave.
Yes.
It's not present day, however, he is in her body, and I guess he still thinks that going up to the cave would, I don't know, I don't get it. I don't really know. There has to be a reason why he went up there. I'm just not remembering it right now because it's been a while since I've seen the actual film. Do you remember if they gave a reason why he went up there?
No, I don't.
Huh. Anyway, that's a little bit confusing.
It's a last resort somehow.
Yeah, I don't know if he's thinking that he needs to summon Mitsuo back again. Anyway.
Maybe because he thinks that she is the only one who can save this. The day. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, for some reason, he heads back up to the top of that dome. And then there's that really interesting thing that's going on where, I guess the quote-unquote red string is also accompanied by some kind of ringing bell noise that they can both hear. Mm-hmm. So they're, kind of weirdly running past each other. Oh, I know what it was. It's, for some reason, even though... Okay, I got it. So Taki's body is in the cave, but that... You know how they have to cross a river to get to that section?
Yeah.
So once you cross the river, you're in the underworld. That space is not touched by time. So his body's in the cave, and even though it was, quote-unquote, 3 years in the future, because that space is the underworld, it's not part of the regular world, it's part of the spiritual world, his body is still there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he goes back, because he's like, that's why I think he says something my body's still there. I think he says something like that. So, he's going back there. Meanwhile, because it's not a space touched by time. See, this is where it gets confusing, because they don't really make at least not in the subversion, I feel like it's not as clear that it's a different space.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, because it's not touched by time, Mitsuo, she wakes up in that body because she's still alive, because it's in the past, ? In the past, right? So, she's still swapping with him. Yeah. It's confusing, but I think it kind of works a little bit.
Yeah.
So, she wakes up, and she gets out of the cave. She goes up to the top of the dome, because she's not going to go back. You can't go deeper in the cave. It's not a cave. She gets out of the cave. She walks back up to the top of the, I guess, the rim of the dome. And then I guess they're nearby enough that they can kind of sense that they're both there.
Yeah. But
I know it's you have to do a lot of mental gymnastics to make the scene work. But I think there is an internal logic consistency. It's just...
Yeah.
I just forgot that the cave was some weird special place. Anyway, so they're running around that rim, but I guess they're close enough that they can hear each other, because, they run past each other, and then there's that weird bell noise, and, kind of see the string for a little bit. And then so they, because it's twilight, it's, that quote-unquote special magical time of twilight where the two worlds, the spiritual world and the, I guess, real world collide, they're able to see each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was confusing. That was really weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, because it's like
they definitely came up with how they wanted it to end, and then was like, "How do we get here?"
Anyway, so they're able to communicate with each other. We have that whole sad scene where it's like they're trying to write each other's names on their hands, but it's not really working. Anyway, I'm gonna skip all that stuff. So, we talked about how effective the cut was when the pen just clatters to the floor, and it's just like, ugh.
It was good,
So good.
So good, but so mad.
Yeah. I wrote down destruction. I don't know if that's... I think that's when... Maybe that's when we get the scenes of the town being destroyed.
Yeah.
Is maybe after the pen scene instead of earlier. I'm just going to try to get to the most important notes, I guess.
I mean, I feel like we've touched a lot on the end already because we jumped around.
Yeah, no, there's a couple things that I wanted to bring up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they end up saving the town. We talked about that kind of ending situation. They save the town.
Well, they save the townspeople.
They save the townspeople. They don't save the town, sorry. They save the townspeople. I mean, I love the scene where, like, after the explosion, all the lights go off around the crater.
That was super cool. Yeah.
So then we go way into the future. So Taki doesn't remember why he was in Itomori a couple years ago. He's like, I was obsessed with the place, and I don't really know why, because he's forgotten. Mitsu was alive, but she's also forgotten what's happened. One line that I didn't really like, and I understand it kind of goes with that whole heteronormative family, love, whatever narrative, but what's her face? The woman who used to work with Taki at the restaurant.
Yeah.
With the brown hair. I guess she notices that, like, Taki is still, like, single and sad or whatever, and she says, you'll be happy someday, too. And I was like, excuse you, lady. What? Like, because I was like, so she's trying to imply, I mean, maybe
you can't be happy unless you have significant other.
Yeah, I was like, excuse me. But again, cultural values, right?
Right.
Like, that's, I mean, isn't that half of K-dramas? Like, you have to find a rich, you know, hunky man
who's
a CEO. Like, so, yes, cultural expectations, like, I get, but I was just like, really, really, lady, you're gonna be like, you can't be happy unless you have someone that you are married to, and I know this because I'm pregnant. Like, okay, lady, chill, chill your jets. So that kind of annoyed me, but I know it's a cultural thing, so whatever. Oh, and I guess one of my pretty much my last note that I want to bring up was when they kind of see each other, they spot each other on the subway, and they kind of do an extremely dramatic race upon each other, which doesn't make any sense, but whatever, let's go with it. Because, like, come on, if you both get off at the same station, I think you would try to meet at one of the corners of the station or in the station, not run around the outside for a good 5 minutes and then find each other outside of the station. Like,
that Maggie, doesn't make... it is fate.
Rule of drama.
And but... two, weren't they on, like, they were on trains that were going in different directions.
Oh, I guess that would make more sense. Still kind of ridiculous, though.
anyway, like, I assumed that they got off at, like, Station A and then Station B, and then they ran to meet in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. I know it's a rule of drama, but anyway. So they're running. They're trying to find each other because it's been years, and they finally recognize the other.
Yeah.
And they're just trying to be super casual on the staircase, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I can't remember. I think she's going down the staircase. She's going up the staircase. And they're like, they see each other, but they're like, I don't even really know what to say to this person because I don't think I've ever seen them before. So they kind of just, like, casually walk past each other. And then finally, I think Taki turns around and is like, haven't I seen you somewhere before? And she's like, yeah. And they're crying. Oh, yeah, that's crying. Crying's back. But I like that staircase thing, too, because it also reminded me of earlier when Mitsuha is screaming
into
the Tori gate and she's on the stairs, they're also on a set of stairs again. So I like that because, like, again, it just art. It just works.
Yeah.
That's kind of all my major notes about the movie. I'm sure I have other things dredged in my head, but I want you to kind of give some of your final thoughts.
I liked it. I finished it and then it felt like my brain hurt and I had to think about it for a while. And I definitely would recommend it to other people. I do think that it was kind of overhyped for me, so it couldn't have lived up to the lofty expectations that I had.
Right.
Which I think contributed to some of my negativity. But in general, I liked it, and I mean, it was really solid.
It's a good film. I mean, I think I say this about most films, but I think it's more enjoyable to see it in a full screen theater. It has more of an impact, especially when you're seeing, like, a giant meteor crash. Like, that feels a lot bigger when you're seeing it on a big screen than a small screen. So, I don't think it's... I'm pretty sure it's been released on DVD, so I don't think it's, like, being shown in theaters anymore. But if you ever get a chance to see it in a theater, I would definitely recommend it. I don't know if it's on Blu-ray. I think it's also on Blu-ray. But it's definitely out on DVD now. So mm-hmm. if you're interested in it, if you for some reason never watched it but listened to us talk about it and found it intriguing even though we gave away the entire story, I would say definitely check out the DVD or the Blu-ray. I have no idea what we're going to be talking about next week. Do you?
We'll figure it out.
Wait, no. We have to go back to one of our shows. Is it Sense8 or is it Badlands? I can't remember which one we're on.
We'll figure it out.
We're either going to do Sense8 or Badlands next week. And, of course, if you have any kind of shows or films that you want to suggest to us, especially, like, weird ones that we've never heard of, because I feel like we are generally pretty good at knowing what's on American TV, but not really other stuff. So if there's other media, like, I don't know, Canadian, because someone recommended Dark Matter to us, and I had no idea that show existed. Canadian, British, not Western, like, definitely go ahead, shoot us an email. Again, we're also on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.